Hello, everyone. Today we are finishing up our series on training others. This has been a series more about legacy than anything else. It's about not what you leave behind, but who you leave behind. And the question before us in this series is, who are you going to leave behind? Who are you going to change? Who are you going to influence? Who are you going to help in their relationship with Christ? Who are you going to usher closer to the person of Christ? And so this Training Others series, which is part of our vision as a church, that everyone would be a faith trainer. And we looked at how Jesus did this, because no one left a legacy bigger than Jesus. This is a person who started off with nothing, as we looked at, and he left this huge legacy and influenced the world in a powerful way. And by looking at how he did it, you and I can know how to influence our world in a powerful way too, and train others in the faith, whether they know Jesus now or not. Training others is about moving people closer, no matter where they start. And we looked at how Jesus did it. He started off with inviting the disciples. He invited Peter. He said, "Come, follow me." And at the end of his life, at the end of all things, at the end of Jesus' ministry, he repeated the same command. He said, "Follow me." But during the time with the disciples, he influenced their head, their hands, and their heart. He spoke to their head. He taught them. He told them truths that they needed to hear, things that would help them to know God. And then he trained their hands, as we looked at last week. He delegated to them. He gave them ministry to do, showing us that if we are going to train others, we need to teach them. And we need to delegate to them things to do. And today, we're going to look at how he prepared their hearts. And he did this through encouragement. You know, one of the perks I have as a pastor is being the recipient of kind words, encouraging words. And I don't know if you know this, I keep all the cards that I've ever received that were of an encouraging nature. And here's some. Here's one from a child. I kept his spelling for those of you who are watching on the overhead. It says, "Pastor Tracy, I like your sermons, and every Sunday, sometimes when I'm gloomy, you're always prepared with a very funny joke." I like that some people think I'm funny. "I'm glad to have you as my pastor. I like it when you tell stories about your childhood." Here's another one. "Thank you for the way we are encouraged to use muscles we never knew we had. Development, growth, strengths, God stretching our limits. Thanks for helping me draw close to God." Oh, that's nice. Here's one from a teenager. "You are a very special pastor to me. You are very encouraging and loving." I like this one because it's very high praise coming from a teenager. And then some of them have sort of well-intentioned lies. Here's one. It says, "Pastor Tracy, you are the best pastor ever." Well, you know, no, I'm not, but thanks for saying it. "We all love you so much. You always have moving sermons that make us think." Here's another one. "Pastor Tracy, I encourage you to keep on ministering to our church. If you weren't here, this church wouldn't be complete." Well, you know, that's not true, but what a nice thing to say, eh? And here's one I got from one of my best friends in Slave Lake before I came here. It says, "Hey, just wanted to pop in and say, you and God got this. You are going to rock this pastor thing in Nanaimo, just like you did in Slave Lake." Well, I think the jury's still out on that one, but what a nice sentiment, eh? And why keep these? Well, here's the other thing about being a pastor, is you not only get really encouraging words, you also are the recipient of a lot of discouraging words. And here's some things that, for me in particular, I find rather discouraging. There's four things I wanted to share with you. The first one is detail fixation. When someone comes to me, say, after a message or something, and they tell me, "Oh, you know," and they might not even say hi or hello, they just get right to it. "You said this word wrong," or "I didn't agree with this sentence you said," or something like that. And it's not that I'm above being corrected. I'm not. I'm okay with being corrected. But if that's all the person talks about, I wonder, did you get the main idea, or did you miss the forest for the tree that you were hugging? Like, I don't know. I want to make sure that, you know, God still spoke to you, because that was the whole reason to put the message together in the first place. Here's another one, me instead of we. Whenever someone comes and they say, you know what I'd really like in a service, or I'd really like in this church that I think would make it better, with no consideration as to whether that would help other people, that's discouraging to me. That's that me thinking. Another one is related. It's us versus them. Anytime that there's someone expresses a thought where the church should really be about us Christians, and for those who are out there in the world, hey, you know, they're on their own, that we're not here for them, I think, man, you are missing our entire mission, I think. Another one is lack of application. You know, when you just finished preaching about forgiveness, let's say, and someone comes to you that week and says, I really don't like so-and-so, I can't stand so-and-so, and on and on, and I think, man, did you not hear what we just talked about? So, you know, I could go on. I could talk about, you know, people who leave the church. That's very discouraging. People who quit their ministry or pull back, that's very discouraging as well. But in case you're thinking this may look like some sort of, you know, wine event from the pastor, I thought, but, you know, I'm not the only one that can get discouraged in a church setting. I think the people, you, can get discouraged from the pastor. And here's some things I think would might discourage you from your pastor. Is, first of all, know-it-allness. If you get the sense that your pastor thinks that he or she has all the answers, that can be rather discouraging, because really, you know better, right? A second one is being unhelpful. You invest a Sunday morning to come and be helped, and the hope is that you will draw closer to God, that you will become, you know, more like Christ, and have more hope and be encouraged. And if you find the morning unhelpful, that can be very discouraging. A third one is kingdom versus kingdom. If you get the sense that your pastor is more about their kingdom than the kingdom, that can be very discouraging. If you get the sense that you are just a minion in their dominion, that's a bit of a problem. And finally, number four is, you know, hypocrisy. It you know, works both ways. If you see a pastor preach about something and then they live completely different, that can be very discouraging. And I'm here to tell you, I am a hypocrite. I'm pretty upfront about that. I do not live all the things that I preach all the time. I don't, and I can't. I try. I don't want to sin, but I do. And I just want to be upfront about that. Now, the reason I bring all this up is because the church is not just the only place that you and I get discouraged. You and I face discouragement in our workplace, in our home, in our neighborhood. Just reading the news can be discouraging. There's all kinds of sources of discouragement, which is one of the reasons that we need encouragement so much. Newspaper columnist and comic writer George Matthew Adams said, encouragement is oxygen to the soul. Encouragement is oxygen to the soul. And I think what that means is without oxygen, you and I suffocate in the darkness. We need people around us who encourage us. Did you know that to encourage means literally to give courage to someone, to empower them, to make them braver? And I believe it makes them more fully who they are. That when you encourage someone, you are allowing them to unleash the shackles on their life to become more who God designed them to be. But when we are discouraged, the opposite is true. We cling to safety, to the familiar, to the hidden. Which is why when it comes to faith training, Jesus did what he could to encourage the disciples, to make them braver, to actually lend them courage to face the world that they were going to face. Because here's the thing I want you to remember, two words: encouragement empowers. Encouragement empowers. And you have that ability in you right now, today, to empower other people. Jesus was a master faith trainer, but he encouraged people in very specific ways. He used feelings, he used truths, and he used commitment. Now, as we go through these, I want you to imagine the impact on people, the people around you, the people that you care about. Imagine the impact if you led a life of constant encouragement, that you went out of your way to encourage them. Imagine the impact that would have in your home and in your workplace, in your church, if you were known as someone who made other people more courageous. Well, let's look at how Jesus did it. First of all, encouragement contains feelings. Jesus said in John 14, he said, "Those who accept my commandments and obey them are the ones who love me. And because they love me, my Father will love them. And I will love them and reveal myself to each of them." Why did he say this? Why would he go out of his way to ensure the disciples that the Father loved them and that he loved them? Clearly, he was empowering them with encouragement. He was letting them know where they stand. Isn't it great when you have someone close to you who says, "I believe in you. I love you. I'm proud of you." It helps you to face challenges, take risks, be less afraid. John Maxwell, a leadership kingpin in Christian circles and even business worlds, he said, "It is often said that great things happen if you don't care who gets the credit. That's not entirely true," he said. "It is more accurate to say that great things can happen when you give others the credit." And here's the important part. He says, "Crediting people through continual affirmation is a key to effective leadership." Continual affirmation is a key to effective leadership. And that's what Jesus was doing. He was affirming the disciples. John Maxwell goes on to tell a story about his childhood that really illustrates how powerful encouragement with feelings can be. He said he was in a Sunday school class one time with a bunch of other 13-year-olds, and goofing off, doing their regular thing during Sunday school. And his teacher at the end says, "I want you, John, and these three boys, to stay behind after class." And the teacher's name was Glenn Leatherwood. And Glenn gathered these boys after class, and they're all thinking they're in big trouble because they were goofing off. And he gathers them, he gets them to sit down, and he says, "Boys, I just want you to know that I see God calling you all into ministry. I think you are all going to be pastors. I want to be the first one to tell you that, and I want to be the first one to pray for you, for your ministry." Well, John said that changed his life. One person who said, "I believe in you. I believe God can use you." And this sense of hope, this display of affection was what John said helped change the course of his life. That's how powerful words of affirmation, words that contain feelings, can be in encouraging people. If you want to encourage someone that you are faith training, if you want to encourage them in their walk with Christ to move closer, be an encourager. Use feelings. Let them know, "I love you. I believe in you. I'm proud of you." Because encouragement empowers. Encouragement empowers. So encouragement contains feelings. Second of all, encouragement contains affirming truth. From Matthew 16, it says, "When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked the disciples, 'Who do people say that the Son of Man is?' Well, they replied, 'Some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, and others say Jeremiah or one of the prophets.' Then he asked them, 'But who do you say I am?' Simon Peter answered, 'You are the Messiah, the Son of God.' Jesus replied, 'You are blessed, Simon, son of John, because my Father in heaven has revealed this to you. You did not learn this from any human being.'" See, the thing that sticks out to me in this passage is that Jesus was looking for the answer. "Who do you say that I am?" Peter got it right. He said, "You are the Messiah." He got it right. Gold star. But Jesus didn't say, "You got the right answer, Peter." He didn't give him a fist bump. He didn't, you know, high five him and say, way to go, you got the right answer. That, and by the way, that's what a lot of boring Bible studies are about, is just getting the right answer. But Jesus went way further and he dug way deeper. And he said, Peter, I want you to know, you not only got the right answer, but you got the right answer because the Father revealed it to you. You have a relationship with my Father. God spoke to you. God spoke through you, Peter. Isn't it amazing when someone comes and more than saying, you got the right answer, but they said, you know, God really spoke through you. God really used you in this situation. That's incredible. It's incredibly encouraging. Imagine how Peter felt when the Son of God told him, my Father spoke through you. And these truths that we bring to people to encourage them are truths from God's perspective. Here's another one that Jesus told the disciples from Luke 10. It says, I saw, and this is when the disciples came back from ministry. He said, I saw Satan fall from heaven like lightning. Look, I have given you authority over all the power of the enemy, and you can walk among snakes and scorpions and crush them. Nothing will injure you. But don't rejoice because evil spirits obey you. Rejoice because your names are registered in heaven. Now, he told them two truths that were amazing. He said, first of all, I want you to know, here's the truth from God's perspective. Evil is not more powerful than you. Evil is not more powerful than the one who lives inside of you. And second of all, don't rejoice that evil submits to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven. Notice what he said. He didn't say your names will be written in heaven. If you perform well, if you do all the right things, if you live a good life, then we'll write your name in heaven. No, no. Before they really did any significant ministry, he said, your names are registered in heaven right now, based on their faith. That is a truth from God's perspective. That is a truth that he shared with them. Why? To encourage them. To let them know where they stand from God's perspective. Well-timed truth from God's perspective empowers. And seeing how this is Remembrance Day, let's talk about a story from World War II. When things were really dark for the nation of England, Britain was in big trouble. And bombs were dropping, buildings were blowing up, people were dying. Things were going against them. And King George VI, who wasn't really known as much of a public speaker, if you've ever watched The King's Speech, the movie, he gets to the radio and he says these words. And I said to a man who stood at the gate of the year, give me a light that I may tread safely into the unknown. And he replied, go out into the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. That will be to you better than a light and safer than a known way. What was King George doing? He was saying, look, here's a truth from God's perspective. Your ultimate safety will not come because of bullets or bombs or winning a war. Your safety will not come in a bomb shelter. If you want ultimate safety, put your hand in the hand of God. There is no safer place than the presence of God. And these words encourage people, not just in Britain, but all around the world. Truth from God's perspective can empower people, encourage them to do more than they thought they were even capable. So encouragement contains feelings, encouragement contains affirming truth, and finally encouragement contains commitment. Look at what Jesus says again to Peter. He calls him Simon. He says, Simon, Simon, in Luke 22, Satan has asked to sift each one of you like wheat, but I have pleaded in prayer for you, Simon, that your faith should not fail. Why did Jesus tell him that? He wanted Peter to know that he had his back in prayer, that he was praying for him, that he was pleading with the Father for Peter's case. Imagine how Peter must have felt knowing that in the darkest times, who is praying for him? The Son of God himself. Imagine how empowering that must have been for Peter to know that Jesus was praying for him. And we can do this with the people that we are faith training. Not only can we share our feelings for them and affirm them, not only can we share God affirming truths, but we can let them know that we are committed to them, that we are praying for them. Here's another one. Jesus said some very famous words in Matthew 11. He says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." I love that word. I will give you rest. "Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I'm humble and gentle in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light." The thing that's so encouraging is it contains the commitment. It says when you are really struggling, when you are really tired, when you are strung out, and some of you are feeling that right now, Jesus said, "Come to me." And it's not that you might get rest. It's not that I'll strike up a committee and determine whether you're worthy of rest. He said, "I will give you rest. I will give you rest." And finally, at the end of Matthew's eyewitness account of Jesus' life, he ends with these words of commitment of Jesus. One final time, Jesus affirms his commitment to his followers, not just the ones in front of him, but all followers, including you and I. He says, "Be sure of this, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." Why would he tell them that? Because he wants them to know his commitment. He is committed to them to the end. Isn't it nice? If you've ever had the privilege of having a friend that you knew would be there for you, that you could call them at 3 o'clock in the morning, wake them up from the deepest sleep and the most needed sleep, and they would come to your rescue, they would come to your aid no matter what, because they love you so much. If someone has ever let you know, "No matter where you are, I will be there for you," that is encouragement that contains commitment. Imagine the impact it has on our kids. If you are a parent here this morning, imagine the impact it has on your children when you say, "Look, no matter what choices you make in life, even if you decide not to follow Jesus, which is the most important thing to me, even if you decide that, I am committed to you. I will love you for the rest of my life. I will serve you. I will do whatever I can that is in your best interest." Imagine the impact that has on a kid. You know, something that happens in churches is that people become members of the church. And while there's part of it is a legal thing, you know, we need members and they have the ability to vote in board members and all that kind of thing. And that's all nice and that makes, you know, the Canadian government happy and all that. But that's not the great thing for me. The great thing for me is when a person stands before their church and they say, "You know what? I know you are going to hurt me. And I know you are going to disappoint me. And I know that we are going to disagree on some details. But I want you to know, despite all of that, despite all those things, I'm committed to you. I'm absolutely committed to you." And this is what it says they did in the very first church. It says they devoted themselves to one another. Now, I don't know what exactly the words were shared, but there was definitely encouragement that contained commitment that said, "No matter what, I am committed to you." This is a great story. I think I might have shared it before, but in the dark days of Richard Nixon's life, after he had faced worldwide disgrace, he got really depressed and he laid in a hospital bed. One day a nurse came in, tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Look outside, this is for you." And a plane flew by and had one of those big flappy banners behind it. And the banner said, "God loves you, and so do we." He found out months later that that was paid for by Ruth Graham, evangelist Billy Graham's wife. He said that little message, just to know that someone was committed to him, even though he disgraced himself and disgraced the nation, just knowing that someone was committed to him regardless, gave him the courage to continue on. Now let me ask you a question here this morning as we begin to wrap up. Do you have too much commitment, too much encouragement in your life? Are there too many people who are telling you, "I love you, I'm proud of you, I believe in you"? Are there too many people telling you, affirming truths from God's perspective, reminding you of where you stand with God, reminding you of God's love for you? Are there too many people expressing their commitment to you, telling you that no matter what you decide to do, they are committed to you? Do you have too many people in your life like that? I'll bet you don't, and neither do I. See, encouragement is one of those strange things. It's something you and I desperately need and desperately want and are often really reluctant to give. Why is that? Well, I read in a book, Confidence and Power in Dealing with People by Les Giblin, there was a statement that he made that really stood out to me. He said, "You can't make the other fellow feel important in your presence if you secretly feel that he is a nobody." I wonder how many times our own arrogance, our own pride, makes us look around at our family, at our co-workers, at our neighbors, even our church, and we believe we're better. And so we don't go out of our way to encourage. We wait for other people to encourage us. And so there's very little encouragement going on. Sometimes a lack of encouragement can come from plain insecurity. You know, that believing that if I give out too much encouragement, well, that means there'll be less for me, because there's a limited amount of encouragement. I'm telling you, right now, there's unlimited encouragement. God has designed you in such a way you could spend the rest of your life encouraging, and there will be plenty still to come back to you. Do you want to help people be empowered? Do you want to give courage to people? Do you want them to be bigger and braver, more filled with faith? Well, the good news is you can. You can disciple. You can train people in the faith exactly the way Jesus did, with feelings, with truth from God's perspective, and with commitment. You can faith train people in the same process that Jesus did, with an invitation, with preparing their head with teaching, with their hands through delegation, with their heart in encouragement. This can be your legacy. This can be what you leave behind, that you are empowering people by the choices that you make today. And you can, that's the beauty. You can start today. You can start before you even leave here. You can encourage someone. You can empower someone by just letting them know your feelings about them, or a truth from God's perspective, or your commitment to them, the same way that Jesus did. Encouraging says, "I love you more than my ego. I love you more than my insecurity, more than my negativity, more than my fear of how you might react if I'm that vulnerable with you." And I know that there's a couple things that need to happen here this morning. That first of all, some of us desperately need an encourager. We desperately need someone who will come along and say, "I love you. I believe in you." I fully believe that many people come walking through those doors every Sunday deeply discouraged, and you might be one of them. And if you're listening to this online, you might be one of those people that are deeply discouraged. And my heart goes out to you. I just want you to know that I pray for you every week. I pray for you. And I'm going to be praying that you find an encourager in your life. But the second thing that needs to happen is just as important. Is that you can decide right now, today, to be an encourager the same way Jesus did. And as we wrap up this series, that you commit to being a faith trainer. That you commit to inviting people, to preparing their head through teaching, and their hands through delegating, and their heart through encouragement. That you start that today. That you find someone today that you can train in their faith. This is your legacy. Who will you leave behind? It's not about what you leave behind as your legacy. It is who you leave behind. Wouldn't it be great at your funeral if people said one after another, you know, I was empowered around that person. I felt encouraged by that person. I grew closer to God through that person, through you. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be a great legacy to leave behind? See, encouragement empowers. Encouragement empowers. As we close, let me pray for you. Father, for all the people who are listening to this, many of them are discouraged. Many of them have gone most of their lives, maybe all their lives, without someone saying, I love you, I believe in you, I am proud of you. Lord, send them someone who will say those things. Send them someone who will give them truths from your perspective, who will remind them of the things that you have said in your word, things that aren't opinions, but things that are actual truth. And finally, send them someone who expresses their commitment to them, that no matter what they decide, they will stand by them. And I also pray that for every person listening to this, that you would help them make the commitment today to be a faith trainer. That you would help them to invite someone into relationship with you. That you would help them to teach others your truths. That you would help them to delegate to someone else. Show them how to minister. Show them what it means to meet other people's needs. And that you would allow them, God, to encourage other people, empower them by sharing their feelings and affirming truths and their commitment. Lord, may this be a new era at Nanaimo Alliance Church, where people are leaving a legacy of faith training, of encouragement, of empowerment. We bring this all to you. And we thank you for the example of Jesus, who showed us how to do all of this. May we follow in his footsteps. Amen.